Happy Thursday to you. A little bit later in the program, Elise Glink will be here. She's by on most Thursdays. We're going to go over some of the latest housing numbers, some construction number. We've had a number of different reports come out. It's hard for me sometimes to keep track because we had new home sales yesterday, existing homes or homes altogether today, both in Illinois and across the country. So Elise Glink is the expert. She'll be along to sort that out. Ian Scher from CNET a little bit after the headlines. And as I said, we're going to go to school with a woman who quit Google out in Silicon Valley to sort of become a little more spiritual. And I'm interested in what she did, but then how she thinks she's going to bring this ritual now back to Google. She's going to give it a shot, it looks like. But we start out with Mandy Antonacci, who writes about business and the business of sports for us, for Inc.com, and joins us from time to time. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch, Mandy.
Hi, Steve. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, so I'm reading your latest column, and you... Well, it seems to me like you're talking almost about low-tech startups, but you start by saying that you were actually wearing three wearables at the time. Come on, what three were you wearing?
It's so true, Steve. So I had a Fitbit on one wrist as I was testing a new model for them. I had a band called Whoop on my other wrist, which is for high-performance athletes, you know, like myself.
Uh-huh.
And then I also had a garment, which is a sports bra that can detect early-stage breast cancer, also in testing. At the same time, as I'm writing about what exactly what you call low-tech innovation.
And I don't want to get distracted, but we were going to talk about that sports bra. Have we ever done that?
No, we need to bring
that to
life.
Okay.
That's actually coming to market soon. Great point.
We'll have you back on for that. All right, so instead you're saying consider these startups, and I don't know, they struck me as sort of low-tech, but they also struck me as sort of they should be encouraging to all of us because they were little ideas that have grown into pretty big things. Let's start with the last one on your list because that maybe was the beginning of it all with the wiffle ball.
You know, the last one's actually my favorite one, Steve. And I'm so happy that you actually kicked this off by calling these low-tech because the inspiration for authoring this column came from a new study that's out showing that on average, we are spending 5 hours per day in our smartphones and in our devices. 5 hours. So what these companies do, like Wiffle Ball, is inspire us in a very innovative way to get back to good old-fashioned physical activity. And Wiffle Ball, that's been around since 1953 as a solution to a couple of kids playing stickball that were doing a lot of damage in neighboring homes in Connecticut,
yeah,
is still in existence.
It's the only way I could ever throw a curveball was because of the Wiffle Ball, the Wiffle Brothers. So thanks very much to them. Okay, so that's sort of the precursor of all of it. I want to also just do a quick disclaimer. I know the spike ball guys. They're from an area of Illinois where I'm from, so I know their parents and their family. But spike ball is one of those things that's hanging in my garage. It's hanging in a lot of garages now. A simple idea that became a multi-million dollar business.
It's true, and this actually made it on Inc. 5000's fastest-growing company list. And I think the really inspiring part of this story is that if you have ambition to be an entrepreneur, you don't have to reinvent or birth something from scratch, right? So, you know, in the case of Spikeball, this was a game that was similarly sold at Toys R Us back in the 80s, I believe. And, you know, the founder had a set that was old and on its last leg. He couldn't find a replacement. So he crowdfunded away, reaching out to some friends for investment toward purchasing the expired trademark. And here we are, brought the lost game back to life.
Yeah, that was Chris Reuter, I think. Okay, let's go through a few others. Explain for me, because I don't understand it, the hockey sauce kit.
Hockey sauce is really cool. It's a couple of guys who are big hockey fans, and they were kind of fed up with basically having to hang up their game during the off season, and they wanted to maintain their accuracy and keep playing. So what they did is create this kit that allows you to play hockey any season, anytime, anywhere, using any type of surface. So you could play it on the ground, you could play it on the beach, you can even make this device float and play it in the water. And if you see some of the videos that they have on their site to help promote this game, it's kind of like extreme sports meets hockey. Some of them are just really crazy shots that I think are going to inspire the masses.
All right, there's that. How about Wobblers?
Wobblers I love, and Wobblers is something that's a really cool technology. I have to say, in doing some research on this company, I did not know that Kansas City was known
no.
to be the soccer capital of the world.
I did not either. College basketball.
Or at least of the country.
I think the College Basketball Hall of Fame is there, but I didn't know about soccer.
It's true. Well, you know, if you look at a lot of these games that are played tailgating on the beach at the park, a lot of them are setting pins. When the pins fall, it requires you to walk over and manually pick them back up and assume the position.
Right, you're playing, you're practicing soccer, you're kicking at a pin, you knock the pin over, you got to go set it up again.
You got to go set it up again. But this unique patented technology negates having to manually reset each pin because they literally wobble, fall down, and then they resume their position and come right back upright, which I think is pretty cool, making the sport a little more efficient and enjoyable.
Yeah, okay. Mandy Antonacci writing at Inc.com about ways that any of us can still come up with a great idea. We don't have to be computer scientists to do it. Great to talk to you again, and let's set up something to talk about that wearable as well very soon, okay?
Would love to, Steve. Thank you again for having me.
All right, so part of the gig is to, you know, I'm always reading different business websites, whether it's CNBC.com or MarketWatch.com, trying to find things to talk about on the show or learn about things we are preparing to talk about. That's what I do. And one of the places I check as well is Business Insider. And lo and behold, I come across this article about a woman who worked for Google and then quit to sell chocolate, to develop chocolate, to benefit from this special chocolate. It caught my eye, and that's why Sina Schellenberger is on a phone line now. Sina, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. Thank you so much.
Okay, I know I did a terrible job of describing that, but let's start. Let's start. What, you were at Google, worked at Google for a number of years, right? What did you do there?
Yeah, I was at Google for about 5 years. I did a lot of different things, but I was on a program management team. So I was doing a lot of project management for primarily the Google Glass team. So the hardware side of things was my main focus.
And you were there, and after a period of time, just sort of what, you're making that terrible Northern California drive to and from work and just sort of to what, get disillusioned, distracted, or what happened to you?
Yeah, I just kind of, I realized more and more that I felt disconnected from myself. I love the people I worked with. Google's obviously an incredible company, lots of amazing perks that everyone knows about. But I was really just stressed and anxious, and I wasn't connected. And I started to get into teaching yoga. So I was actually teaching at Google. And I ended up going on a yoga retreat a couple years, probably 3 years ago. And that was where I first was introduced to cacao and cacao ceremonies.
And cacao is I'm sorry, cacao is like a primitive form, or not primitive, but early form of chocolate, or how would you describe it?
Yeah, it's the raw ingredient in chocolate. So it's actually a bean. It grows on trees. It looks kind of like coffee beans.
And you refer to rituals. So when you combine this drink, right, the cacao and hot water, and couple it with the ritual, you found a life-changing experience.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the kind of cacao. So it's not like a chocolate bar you'd buy at the grocery store. It's really totally just 100% cacao, which is actually the most bitter food on the planet. So it has a totally different effect. And when you take it in higher doses, it can really, I've found it really transformed my life and many others that I've seen.
Hallucinogenic? Did you find it as a hallucinogenic, Sina?
No. It's not a hallucinogenic. I did find, like, I have had some visions and had, like, more connection with my intuition. So I feel, like, more clear on kind of my gut guidance. But it's not, like, you know, intense psychedelic drugs at all.
No. Yeah, I didn't mean to imply that. So you go back, you say, Google, I love you, I'm going to quit. And from there, you have started this marketing campaign, a website called Open Your Heart with Cacao, where you lead these sort of online tutorials, maybe seminars. But the idea is it's not just, you just can't take in the ingredient, right? There's ritual involved, and the ritual is a big part of it, right? Explain that for me.
Yeah, so the ritual comes, I mean, this cacao has been used as medicine for over 3,500 years by Aztec and Mayan cultures. So there's a lot of indigenous wisdom that comes with this plant and using it in this way. And so I have learned that and studied it a lot. And I was getting a lot of questions. I was just sharing on social media while I was traveling after I quit Google, and people would reach out and ask, you know, they wanted to work with it, but just like what you picked up on, they're like, well, can I just make it?
Right.
And is that it? Like, what's more? And there's there's a lot more to it. It can be as simple as like a morning intention setting of just getting clear on what, you know, what your intention or your goal for the day is.
So it sounds like it's yoga with a tasty drink.
Yeah, it's totally part of like a wellness toolkit. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what I'm interested in, we're just about out of time, but you left Google because you were distracted, disoriented. You found this on our Calmer Now. It's nice that you've sort of found your calling here. People can find more if they go to your website. Just search Open Your Heart with Cacao. Do you see maybe you bringing now your calmness back to Google?
Yeah, I would love to do that. I think that'd be a really fun way to combine the two worlds. And I think people at Google would be super open to it.
Sina Schellenberger, great to talk to you. I appreciate it. You did great. Well, I hope we can talk again soon.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
And Elise Glink will be along a little bit later to talk about all the housing numbers, the construction numbers that were unveiled this week by one government agency or another, feds as well as state. And I think it all has to do with supply, right? There aren't a lot of houses out there to buy. Ian Schur is an editor at CNET, and he joins us on most Thursdays to talk about what's going on in the tech world. Ian, welcome back to the Winterhouse Business Lunch.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm awesome, thank you. Now, if I'm a Verizon customer, am I happy or am I not happy? Because I see that they're offering a more affordable data plan, but they're slowing the data down. What's all this about?
Yeah, so yeah, if you're a Verizon customer, it's a little mixed. So what they're doing is that you've heard of all these unlimited plans, which I'm putting in air quotes.
Because, I can see that.
They're changing all of their rules, right, all the time. So Verizon just lowered the price of its unlimited plan by $5, but it's not really unlimited. They're going to make your video streams lower quality. If there's a bunch of people around you also using the network, they're going to slow you down. And so, there are strings attached. And if you want to live a more kind of free life with higher speeds and better video, you have to pay them $5 more than you were last week. So it's one of those things where it just keeps changing, and the definition of, quote, unlimited is changing as well.
So what they can do is they're saying, look, we're offering you a cheaper plan, but if you wanted the plan that you currently have, you're going to have to pay more.
In a way, yes, right? And what they're doing is they're trying to answer a lot of the competition from AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile, who have also been pushing really hard on this idea. You know, a lot of it is that there just isn't enough ways to squeeze extra dollars out of us. And so they're all trying to play this game of financial chess to figure out how they can have the best deal, but also get the most money out of us.
So this is
what we get.
How does it compare then to other carriers?
You know, they're basically all kind of in the same way. Like, for example, there are some big differences. Like T-Mobile has been pushing pretty hard, and I think Sprint as well, on this idea of having international access as well. So Canada and Mexico are free. And so it was free under Verizon's old plan, but now with the new plan, you have to pay for more to get that. So it's stuff like that where, you know, you're basically going to get the same thing from a lot of them, but it's these little details that might matter to you. And then there are some cases like, you know, like T-Mobile or Sprint who are doing like half the cost, but there's a lot of also a bunch of strings attached.
Hey, I got to tell you something, Ian. There's a guy on Twitter who really bugs me. And so I had this idea this morning when I woke up. I'm like, I'm going to raise a lot of money. I'm going to buy Twitter, and then I'm going to kick him off. What are my chances?
Very low. So you and Valerie Plame, right, the old ex-CIA agent, have something in common.
So Valerie Plame was this, she was a CIA agent. She was her identity was revealed in this great scandal in the Bush administration publicly, and there were investigations as Scooter Libby was involved.
Right.
And so now, though, and I met Valerie Plame. She came through with the book, I think, or something a few years ago. She's started, is it GoFundMe or Kickstarter? GoFundMe?
It's GoFundMe, but basically it's a crowdfunding campaign.
Right, and she wants to raise $1 billion to buy Twitter.
Yep. Yeah. Well, she wants to raise $1 billion. First off, Twitter's worth more than $1 billion. So she's realistic. She can't suddenly take over. But what she thinks is that $1 billion will allow her to buy enough shares in the company on the public market that she's the largest shareholder and thus is able to force the company to make a change. And the specific change she wants is she's not going after harassment or all the neo-Nazis or everything. She wants to kick Donald Trump off of Twitter.
Right.
And that is what she wants to raise the money for.
So I don't know where to put this in my brain. Like, is it a joke? Is this public art? Are people contributing?
Yes, people are contributing. She only has a few thousand dollars. So I think it squarely falls in the public art domain, where she's making a very brash and dramatic political statement using a very popular platform, right? People use GoFundMe for all sorts of stuff. And so it's a really interesting thing. Look, if she gets the $1 billion, it's going to be fascinating to watch what happens.
Well,
but if I was a betting man, I would say it's probably not going to happen.
You're a risky guy. It would change my whole morning routine. I get up, I brush my teeth, and I check to see what the president has tweeted.
Well, you know, you'd just be going to Facebook or something else, right? I mean, he's going to be using that because the president has made very clear many times that he doesn't trust the media, including you and me, to put out his message effectively. And so he wants to use social media to go directly to his supporters. And at least the people that do support him seem to like that. So, it here we are. He's going to use something.
Ian, do you like this country?
I love this country. And,
okay.
And particularly because it has been my home since I was born. And it is what took my grandparents in during the war. I've always been thankful.
I'm just making a list of fellow reporters who do. That's all. Bennett Wakenight, a fine producer, looked it up. He said Valerie Plame has raised $46,000 so far. Now, those people they don't have to write the check, right, until she gets to a billion. They're not writing checks.
You know, it depends on how the GoFundMe is actually set up. Some of them, they don't get the money until the full amount is there. Others, they get the money even though. So I didn't check to see which one she set up as.
All right.
But, you know, rest assured, she'll use that money for some sort of a thing that falls under this banner, no matter what.
When it comes to trends to tech, I'm really not a trendsetter. I tend to wait until everyone has one in their home and then I jump on board. So how long will it be before I have a VR headset? Because it seems to me like they came out with great fanfare. I don't know that they're selling so well, and the prices are dropping fast, right? People are slashing prices to try to move these things.
They are. So we saw Oculus, which is owned by Facebook. They're the preeminent VR headset people. They dropped their prices by about $200 a couple months ago. Now HTC, which makes the other big competitor headset, has also dropped their price $200. And look, this is stunning to watch. Like, these types of price drops are unprecedented. When Apple had the iPhone in the beginning, you remember they dropped the price after a few months. It was $100 that they dropped. When you see video game people like PlayStation and Xbox drop their prices, it's like $50 or $100. $200 is just a huge amount, and it shows us that these things are not selling as much as people had hoped, and that this industry is struggling to get people's attention, including yours.
Well, is it maybe because they're trying to squeeze too much money out of us? If they can afford to drop it $200, maybe they were they're pricing themselves out of the market to begin with.
You know, it's two ways about it, right? I mean, certainly the rules of electronics selling is that you find the people who are the biggest fans and the most excited, and you get the most money out of them first. And then you drop the price as it becomes cheaper to make, and you're able to keep a good, healthy profit margin.
And then 10 years after that is when I end up buying it.
Right. And you're one of those people. I'm usually the first or second wave, right? I had the first iPhone. A lot of people waited for the third iPhone. So it's normal to see this happening, but it's not normal to see these price drops happen this dramatically. And what we were told in the first beginning years last year when these devices were coming out is that they were selling them close to the cost of making them in the first place.
Oh, wow.
So it's possible they're selling them at a loss now, which is, again, a huge problem if it's true.
By the way, I just picked up a BlackBerry. I'll have to show you how it works. It's pretty cool. Ian Scherer, great to talk to you again. We'll talk again next week.
My pleasure.
Orion has his eyes on business. Ryan has his eyes on the weather. I have my eyes on Elise Glink, who's sitting right across from me. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So you came in with a little news for me. I mean, I know we're going to talk about things that really impact people's lives and housing sales and things like that. But on the show with you and with Dennis Rodkin and others, we've talked about the
Zillow Zestimate.
Zillow, that's what
thing.
I couldn't think of Zillow. So they Zestimate. They have a Zestimate for what your house is.
Yes.
There's a woman in Glenview, I think, right?
Right. She's an attorney named Barbara Anderson.
And she was suing because she said, look, the Zestimate is too low on my house, I'm trying to sell my house, and you're hurting me.
Right.
She went to court And what happened?
So actually, our good friend Dennis Rodkin reported that Judge Amy St. Eve, the district judge, has dismissed the case.
She's a federal judge.
Yep. And so the lawsuit was dismissed. One count was dismissed with prejudice, meaning they cannot refile. Three were dismissed without prejudice, meaning they can amend the case and they can refile. But Judge St. Eve noted that the word Zestimate is really a combination of Zillow and Estimate. And it says it all over the website. So she was couldn't really find the legal basis.
So it's not an appraisal.
No.
If it was an appraisal, then maybe she'd have a case.
No, but the way that it is taken, and it is, I think, interesting and a great lesson for everybody out there who checks Zillow sort of religiously with some fervor, and there's a lot of people chasing those 100 million eyeballs that end up at Zillow or at Trulia. Realtor.com has got some new technology they're working on. Everybody wants to capture you when you're in the moment of doing something, and if you have your eye on your estimate of what your home's value actually is, you're much more likely to be thinking about, oh, shall I tap into that? Oh, wait, there's a mortgage lead I could be selling. So there's a lot of focus on this, but anybody who's buying or selling, if you're looking at Zillow, it can be wildly inaccurate or sort of accurate, is my experience.
Well, you know what? And I understand her concern about it. She's trying to sell her house, and if she thinks that's too low, that's what I'm going to do. If I'm going to see a house for sale, I'm going to go see what Zillow says it's worth.
Well, I think the danger is when it's actually priced too high. So what people are doing is they go to Zillow and they kind of look around for homes that they think are in their price point. If you're a little bit lower, to me, your house looks like a better value and you're going to have more people interested in it. If it's, especially in a market like now.
Yeah, but if you're trying to sell it for more.
So if you're trying to sell it for more, then this is not going to help you so much. But on the other hand, when you actually price the property, and you've got people who are, you know, very engaged in that price point, they're going to be looking at you and more likely to make a bid.
All right. Tell me about the numbers that came out this week.
So people are looking for houses, whether they're priced high or low. The existing home sale number fell 1.3% in July. Existing homes are everything other than brand new stick-built homes. It's still up 2.2% from a year ago. Everybody agrees that the reason sales are down is that there's not enough homes for sale. In fact, inventory is down 9% from a year ago. That's keeping pressure up on prices. The good news about the price side, at least, is that mortgage interest rates are low.
Right. And so what I'm reading about that, though, is it might be keeping a lot of first-time home buyers out because the prices keep going up.
There's no question about it. If you look at what's going on with millennials priced who are aged up to 34, the number of millennials who actually are getting mortgages is super low, much lower than the Gen X cohort that came before.
And people disagree about why that is, right? Some say they can't afford it. Others say that they're just more nomads. They're apartment renters. They don't want to buy them. You don't buy that.
That's bull cocky. I don't believe that. No. I think that they've got a lot of student loan debt. I think that they have been slow to come out of this recession and find jobs that pay enough to buy a house. I think a lot of them live in places where housing is unaffordable, like the entire West Coast now. So things are getting super pricey and low interest rates are good. And I just want to jump in with new housing sales, which came out today. This was the really shocking number, down almost 9.4% from last month, down 9% year over year.
And because those are home sales and those are home building jobs, too.
These are home building jobs. We're seeing the median sales price go up because more bigger, fancier houses are being sold instead of the first time buyer ones. But if you look over the last, since 2012, we are not seeing a whole lot of numbers for new home sales. And in fact, there's just, they think maybe like under 600,000 will sell again.
Elise Glink, publisher of ThinkGlink.com, CEO of Best Money Moves. Thanks for coming by.
Nice to see you.
Check it all out at BestMoneyMoves.com.